to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the survivor of free speech, but only just barely. I heard Jim Fetzer's show. His teams crashed. We lost a lot from your show, from Paul Stephenson's show, Last Man Standing, the Sunday show. We had to record about two-thirds of the program over again. Microsoft, Bill Gates is just an evil, evil person. I mean, this is the way I look at it. Like, destroying computing by ripping off everybody else's software and then making it suck and getting a monopoly on it. Like injecting us with gene-altering vaccines, so-called vaccinations, in order to make us sterilized, that's bad enough. But this team stuff has really crossed the line, okay? This is where I'm going to put my foot down. So, Bill Gates, you've got it coming. All right. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. The operator's standing by. Paul, you're standing by too, right?
I am, Patrick.
Okay. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. All right, yeah, so, I think Bill Gates has finally just crossed the line. I think he's finally done it. I mean, spraying the ionosphere with pixie dust in order to blot out the sun, that's bad. But what he's doing with this Skype to Teams business, no, I can't go for that. That's pushing it too far.
Yeah, blocking out the sun's one thing, but when you start messing with Skype, that's crossing the red line.
That's crossing a red line right there. Yeah. What the hell's the matter with this world? I had this Jewish landlady, and she was old enough that she lost her, like, her brother at the end of World War I went out to get some bread and never came back. They never saw him again. And then she was in a labor camp in World War II. Now, she didn't actually have to do any labor because her husband told the Germans that that her eyesight was worse than it actually was. And so they said, okay, well, then she doesn't have to work. Because actually, that's how it worked. The Nazis were not as unreasonable as we're led to believe. But
you mean to say she was Jewish and blind, and they let her live? I mean, this German negligent soldier himself got slaughtered.
I mean, when she was old, and I lived in her house. I used to read her mail because she couldn't read things anymore. But back in the 40s, her eyesight, like, she was probably legally blind in one eye, but she wasn't as blind. She was kind of proud of her husband for having tricked the Nazis. Her husband told the Germans that, oh, my wife doesn't see very well. And then they said, okay, well, then she doesn't have to work. This is what she told
them. They've been tricking everybody since.
Yeah. But at any rate, so she lost her brother in World War I. She was in camps in World War II. But then when the local supermarket closed, she said, I'm so glad I'm old and will die soon because I don't want to live like this anymore. Because her favorite supermarket closed. I thought she was actually really funny. None of the other Jews liked her, but I thought she was really funny, actually. So, anyway.
She could deal with the German camp, but not her favorite supermarket.
Shutting down the Piggly Wiggly, that's no good. You can't have that. That's crossing the line. Okay, labor camp, dead brother. Okay, but shutting down Piggly Wiggly, no way. She's ready. She's ready for the grave at that point. Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, okay, so obviously lots of stuff's going on. We were talking to Mark Collett earlier this week about the council election results, so you got that business. In Germany, I guess, I just saw a headline that Merz finally did get elected by the Reichstag, not the Reichstag, what is it, the Bundestag. He lost the first vote. He didn't get elected on the first vote. So,
well, Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Well, Mercurius is saying that he's abrasive and nobody likes him.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure his family and his friends like him.
Yeah, you heard the same show.
Yeah, I thought I have to get handed to Mercurius when he's on form, because I thought he was on form yesterday with some of those analysis. There's no doubt about it. Mercurius, he does have a certain weird, quirky charisma. I mean, it's funny when he's talking about really serious topics and he starts with... He starts laughing, and he can get away with it too.
Yeah,
you know, he's like got this like little nervous kind of chuckle when he's talking about really serious issues. But anyway, yeah, I thought his analysis was very good. In fact, I wanted to go over and listen to it again, but I don't have the time right now. But
is there anything in particular you want to start off with?
Well, we can just expand on what you were saying about the UK elections in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's happening in Germany very much mirrors, you know, what's been the case here. You know, when Keir Starmer came in, you know, people sort of held their nose and through gritted teeth, voted him in because of their absolute repulsion and abject frustration and to the point of resentment and hatred of the Conservative Party, mainly over the mass immigration issue. And so Merz, you know, so he came in as one of the most unpopular leaders, like we've spoken about before. He had, you know, his vote share was so low. It was even lower than Corbyn's in 2018. So the Germans have expressed their similar lack of enthusiasm for this new guy, Merz. Meanwhile, the AfD, they're likely to probably end up banned, even though they're, you know, arguably the most popular party in Germany, right? And you have Marine Le Pen in France, who, you know, is going through this lawfare. So there isn't much democracy in the Middle East, or in the Middle East, in Europe. You just have a bunch of despots who are, you know, desperately hanging on to their, you know, their power, the Macrons, and, you know, the establishment generally. But the trends are not looking good. It's just that there's a lot of obstacles to fight, which are, you know, ostensibly authoritarian and completely undemocratic. All the while, of course, we support that exemplary beacon and light to the world of democracy in Ukraine. And as far as the UK is concerned, you know, that is the only thing I'll expand on, because, you know, there's so much else to talk about. You've spoken to Mark Collett about the local elections. Obviously, the Reform Party did extremely well. Labour, you know, got trunched, and Conservatives even worse. And all they've got, and I think this is something that Mercurius was talking about as well, when he was referring to an article he read out, forget the name of the guy, but this is all the only sort of strategy, in quotes, they've got left with the, you know, with the rising phenomena that is Farage, is to basically, you know, criticize and condemn him as a Putin lover. You know, he's throwing the Putin talking points, and, you know, they have this strategy where they're putting out this ridiculous, obscene propaganda about how we need to prepare, and how we need to prepare the British citizenry and the bunkers and, you know, all sorts of stuff for a Russian attack. And so the tactics and the strategy are basically, well, you know, the Russians are obviously going to be attacking us soon. They've made recent threats. And you can't trust Nigel Farage, but, you know, I'll trust you, because obviously I hate you. So I'll trust you. Now, this all ignores the fact that we haven't really had threats from Russia. We've had warnings, because we, you know, when we sent them those Storm Shadow missiles, which, as I understand, it can only really be operated by, you know, British British military personnel and intelligence and whatever. And so the Russians did warn that, you know, if you keep this up, you might get a reaction, more or less. So they didn't. It wasn't really a direct threat. But, it, you know, Starmer and all this fear-mongering propaganda. They failed to mention the fact that we have already, through the Storm Shadow missiles and other, you know, military support and propaganda, whatever, we have been attacking Russia constantly. The British have been at the forefront of this hostility. And like I said, they provided all sorts of military support in terms of intelligence as well, you know, in addition to the Americans, but also they've sent weapons, and including these Storm Shadows at a time where the Russians made it very clear that this is not acceptable. So they didn't really mention that. And yet, you know, the Russians look at the UK and think, well, you're not really a threat to us. We dealt with the Storm Shadow missiles. We've got bigger fish to fry. So the idea that the Russians are going to attack the UK is absolutely absurd, unless the British do something else, which provokes the Russians to such an extent. But, you know, this is the tactic, this is the strategy that they, Labour, Starmer and the Labour government are engaging in. Oh, let's try and scare the British public and tell them that Nigel Farage is working for the enemy, but you'll be safe with me, because they've got nothing else. You know, they're so unpopular. And they were so unpopular even when they came into power, like I said, very much sort of mirroring the Germans' situation with Merz, because he, like Mercurius pointed out correctly, he's incredibly unpopular and he actually struggled. It's embarrassing for him. You know, there had to be some probably manipulation behind the scenes to even get him,
One point I want to interject is that, so they have, what is it? Are there 630 members of the Reich, of the Bundestag, and right, or Bundestag, is that how you pronounce it? And to have
Bundestag,
a majority, maybe you need 316, and the two parties, or, well, it's technically three parties. There are two Christian Democrat parties. One of which are always in like alliance with each other, and one of them has this Fred Merz. I call him Fred Merz. Frederick Merz, but Fred Merz was a character on the I Love Lucy show from the 1950s. A lot of our listeners would know that. So Fred Merz is an easy way to remember him. So Fred Merz is the leader of one of these parties, and because the AfD won so many seats in the last election, in order to get a majority there, they've got a coalition with the Social Democrat Party of Olaf Scholz. And that grouping should have a safe majority of about 330. It should have about a 15-seat majority. And yet they weren't able to muster the votes on the first round. And because they were doing a secret ballot, that means like 19 out of, say, 330, which would be, you know, that's over 5% of the members of this coalition secretly voted against him or didn't vote for him. They don't like him. So he doesn't really have majority support in the Bundestag. So I just wanted to interject that.
No, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's an embarrassing situation for them. I mean, I think there's going to be absolute hell to pay and an uproar in Germany, finally, if they ban the AfD. There's one thing in the UK where they banned the British Nationalist Party back in the day. The British Nationalist Party they didn't have the same vote share and, public support, necessarily, as the AfD. I mean, the British just decided that it was like any threat was intolerable, so they banned the British National Party. But if they ban the AfD, that's going to be a different story, I believe. But I hope so, anyway. So they are having to resort to these heavy-handed, undemocratic tactics to, keep the tide at bay, to try and, cover over the cracks of the dam, which is leaking heavily. But the general direction and trend is towards a kind of a Trumpian-esque populist nationalist, rising. Here, it seems that Reform or Unstoppable are likely to be the next party elected, with Nigel Farage as the Prime Minister. That even like a year ago, that would have seemed like crazy, but such has been the meteoric rise of Farage and Reform that just seems inexorable at this stage, notwithstanding that the British establishment can always resort to the similar tactics and without any shame, as the French and the Germans and the Romanians. But the rise is towards the rest of Europe sort of having leaders a bit like Maloney, or, you know, maybe if we're lucky, Orban in Hungary, who's a little better. And they're always popular when they come, when they're, you know, campaigning. And then when they come into power, they get diluted anyway. You know, I mean, Maloney was much more based, if you like, when she was campaigning. But then, you know, when she got elected, it wasn't 5 minutes before she was sucking up to Ursula von der Leyen and towing the line and supporting Ukraine. I pointed that out at the time, the stark contrast between her rhetoric on Ukraine, for example, before she was elected and afterwards. So, that is the trend, though. But, you know, like I said, Starmer was very unpopular before, and then he brought out this policy of freezing the old people. You know, he stopped the winter fuel payment for pensioners. I think that was the final straw, really. And at this point, that's kind of, you know, that horse is bolted. That's kind of a, you know, can't put the toothpaste back in the tube thing. Even they would reverse that. You know, the British electorate would see that as completely disingenuous and desperate. So that's what's happening over here. And they are using the Ukraine thing and, you know, drumming up this phony threat of the Russians, and then use that to condemn and continue to fear mongering about Nigel Farage. You know, like I said, he can't be trusted. We're going to be attacked by the Russians, and you better stick with me, Starmer, to keep you safe. I don't think it's going to work. Starmer doesn't have the personality and the charisma to pull this off. I think the vast majority of the British public see through this facade. I don't think that the support for Ukraine is anywhere near as much as what Starmer and the British establishment believe it to be. You're going to have the usual suspects, the hopelessly indoctrinated crowd as usual, who will never change and will not change as well, regardless of what information they're presented by with. But, you know, this kind of tactic and strategy of smearing Farage as a Putin puppet, essentially, and towing the Russian propaganda and the Russian talking points, it's nothing new, and it hasn't affected his popularity. In fact, these establishment types, they never seem to learn that it's the same with Trump. The more they attack him, the more popular it makes a figure like Trump or Farage. You know, it actually plays into their hands. So that is not going to work. So they'll have to come up with some other underhand, nefarious activities to prevent Farage from taking part. Interestingly, one of the things that Reform were pushing was, you know, when these UK local elections came out, that in the local councils, that the Reform Party put forward the radical idea that in the UK, in England, that we shouldn't be flying any other flags, you know, apart from British flags, whether it's outside a library or whether it's outside one of these town halls where the elections are held. And he got criticised, or the Reform Party got criticised for this, you know, again, as essentially...
Yeah.
the Reform Party got criticized for this, again, as essentially being pro-Putin. Because can you? I'll give you one guess as to what other flags might be flying here in the UK, Patrick, outside local councils and whatever buildings and town halls and museums or whatever. What other flags do you think might be flying as well as the Union Jack and the St. George's flag or in England?
I mean, obviously they're looking at talking about the Ukrainian flag, but there's also the gay flags and the Negro flags and all that stuff. The Black Riot flags. I wanted to send our engineer at RBN a flag for a reason. I don't know why, but I wanted to send her a flag. And so I looked in the emojis of Skype because Skype. It was still Skype. And Bill Gates, what flags does he offer us? Does he offer us a cool flag like? The Nazi flag or the Confederate flag or even the Rising Sun Japanese flag. No. The only flags are gay. It's like, so I had to send a, what was it? Gender fluidity flag? They got a lot of gay flags, but no cool flags. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's Bill Gates again. But yeah, the Ukrainian flag. You know, it would be one thing if you actually had a foreign dignitary visiting and then you fly, you have the flag of your foreign guest. But otherwise, it's a symbolic thing. Here's the thing. We've got these so-called right-wing populist movements all over so many major Western countries, so-called Western countries. And you got Trump. He's in office. You got Farage, he's obviously the most popular politician in Britain. You've got the AfD, which is now polling ahead of every other party. They're, according to polls, they're the most popular party in Germany, the alternative for Deutschland. You've got Orban, who's in power in Hungary. Fico, I don't know much about him, in Slovakia. And Giorgia Meloni, who's got charisma, and I think she's pretty hot. But they're all kosher. And what do we get? With Trump, what do we get? We get deportation of people who criticize Jews. And then in the past 24 hours, he was given an interview where he was saying that Putin wants all of Ukraine. He wants all of Ukraine. All of Ukraine. It sounded like he was singing a song. He kept repeating it over. It was the chorus of a new song, All of Ukraine. He wants to take all of Ukraine. So,
yeah, well, yeah, let's get to that in a minute. One other thing, I don't even know. I don't know whether, the Ukrainian flag is mainly what Reform were referring to. And rightly so that they said that these flags, because this is all part of the propaganda, basically, having these Ukrainian flags, we're fighting for Ukraine, for Western values. Must stand by Ukraine, and don't forget, so they keep these flags flying constantly. But I don't know whether you know from being in the UK what a zebra crossing is.
What is?
Okay. A zebra, you would call it a zebra.
Oh, a zebra crossing, yes. Like when the Beatles were crossing Abbey Road, they were in a zebra crossing.
Yeah, well, exactly. So it's like, it's a part of the road where pedestrians have the right to cross, and traffic must stop. In fact, you mentioned Abbey Road. I'm surprised they haven't superimposed the rainbow flag over that.
Yeah.
Maybe they have, and I haven't seen it. But a lot of local councils have just taken the liberty to change these zebra crossings into rainbow flags. Okay. So you have to cross over the sodomy.
Hey,
sodomy tracks.
I know a guy who invented a portable zebra crossing. So you'd roll it up, and then whenever you wanted to cross the street, you just roll it out and cross the street, and then you'd roll it up again. That was kind of funny. But if you've actually got these rainbow like sodomy crossings and you don't want to cross on it, the portable zebra crossing actually would come in pretty handy.
Yeah. Or just roll out a swastika over and then walk over that.
That would be cool.
Just to do. Yeah, just to do.
Kanye should manufacture and sell those. I think that would be a big business for him.
Yeah, but that is typical of how the brainwashing is just so prevalent everywhere in our cultures. You know, they just take the liberty to do that. I don't know what gives them the right to do that, but they just do it anyway. So, you know, you have Ukrainian flags flying and rainbow flags, zebra crossings. So it's very, very aggressive that way, you know. And they don't hold back, you know. Unfortunately, these populist leaders come in and they do hold back. I mean, you know, your Macrons and your, you know, the establishment figures, they don't hold back. I mean, they are so aggressive and they don't make any apologies. But the populist leaders are always kind of manipulated and they do hold back and, you know, whatever. They pander to the media as best they can. I guess we should have some sympathy for them considering what they're up against. But, I actually thought, I mean, Trump is so, you know, they say, you know, isn't there a saying that a week's a long time in politics? Well, if, you know, with Donald Trump, 24.
Seven,
So, you know, they say, you know, isn't there a saying that a week's a long time in politics? Well, if, you know, with Donald Trump, 24 hours is a long time in politics because it's so chaotic. You know, the man's either a genius or they just make it up as they go along. And whatever comes out of his mouth, whatever the first thought comes to his head when he's doing these interviews. I mean, he's just all over the place.
He's an idiot savant. That's the term for it, idiot savant. Did you ever see the movie Rain Man?
Oh yeah,
yeah. That's Donald. That was based on Donald Trump. It's based on a real true story.
Yeah, so I do think, unfortunately, it's the latter. There is no 5D chess going on. I think everybody is rightfully confused because the messaging is so chaotic. And when it comes to the Middle East and Iran, the Houthis was a big statement made last night, and Russia. You know, they just don't really seem to have any coherent strategy or position. And so Douglas McGregor made a good point on the judge yesterday that, you know, because Trump is ignorant, he doesn't have the confidence to have a position on a lot of things, you know, particularly with foreign policy. So he relies, and it makes him very vulnerable to people around him to provide him with information. And of course, he has, you know, still got many of the swamp creatures surrounding him. And so you get this battle within the Trump administration of the usual, let's go and send our soldiers to fight and die for Jewish wars and Jewish interests, also known as, if you're the YouTube crowd on the judge and others, as neocons. And, you know, particularly the case when it comes to, you know, the Zionist crowd, trying to get a war going with Iran, etc., but also in Ukraine as well. Let's not forget, you know, there's no U.S. interests over there either, as there isn't when it comes to any threat from Iran. So you've got that, and then you've got people like J.D. Vance and others that do seem to be, you know, American firsters, MAGA crowd, and you even have, you know, people like Marjorie Taylor Greene coming out in no uncertain terms about. She didn't mention Israel directly, but you'd have to be a complete moron to not realize she was talking about Israel. Well, be going over it.
I have to say, she kind of is a complete moron. But that having been said, maybe not complete, but pretty darn close. She once made what she thought was a pro-Jewish statement, and she got smacked down by the Jews for it because you know, you have to. You have to praise the Jews, but you have to praise them the right way. And if maybe she used the term Nazi against somebody that wasn't, I mean, I don't know. She wasn't using the term Nazi against Israelis. Maybe she was using the term Nazi against, you know, some political opponent. And she got smacked down for it. And even somebody like her would think, wait a minute, why is this happening? Why do I get in such trouble? I was trying to be nice to the Jews. Why do you have to tiptoe around like that? So I don't know. But there's a lot going on, and even outside of the electoral political realm, there's a lot going on. Are you aware of the N-word controversy that's going on the past week?
No.
Okay. So on May 1st, there was some woman in Minnesota, a blonde woman with tattoos and kind of trailer trashy, honestly, and some young black kid, elementary school age black kid, was rummaging through her diaper bag or whatever, looking for stuff, and she chased him away and called him the N-word. And then some Somalia guy, who apparently has he's been arrested for, like, child sexual abuse in the past. He's got some history. But he started filming her and encouraging her to use the N-word again. I'm a boomer, so I'm not going to use it. But she said three times in a row. And the Somali guy said, do you think it's okay to tell a child that he's an N-word? And she said, yeah, if he's acting like an N-word, hell yeah. And then she flipped him off. And people are so sick of it. So sick of all this stuff, especially coming just a couple of weeks after you had that case where some black was rummaging around in a tent at a football game, and when he was told, you know, that he didn't belong there, he stabbed another white kid to death. And it didn't make it any better that the white kid's father then apparently sided with the blacks and said this isn't a racial issue. And the blacks raised like hundreds of thousands of dollars for the black kid who murdered the white kid. But with this, the N-word lady, the white lady, she's raised like $500,000. And on the sites where she's raising money, you'll have somebody who contributes $2,006 and with the comment, the one letter N, and then the next person, $2,005, and the comment I, and, you know, spelling the N-word vertically, which is kind of a meme, but that meme raised over $12,000 for her. So it's a big deal, apparently. I mean, I'm not part of this whole social media stuff, but I understand from people who know more about it than I do that this is a big deal. Andrew Anglin wrote about it. He's saying that white people are just obviously they're tired of tiptoeing around and worrying about the feelings of blacks. And then there is a Jewish guy. What's his name? He owns Barstool Sports. He was in part of the Tucker sphere. Tucker used to have him on his show when he had a Fox News show. What's the guy's name? I don't know. He's some Jewish guy. And apparently he owns a bunch of bars. And somebody left a sign in front of one of the bars that said, F-word the Jews. And he posted some video where he said he was so angry. He was shaking. He's so angry that somebody put... Oh, that word there, that sign there. And apparently he's not getting a very warm response. So there's a lot of stuff going on in society. And a lot of it's amongst younger people that I'm not really that in tune with because I'm a boomer. But apparently people have had enough. And Trump is being a complete jerk. And his popularity apparently has gone way down. And at some point, people are just going to start, when I say taking matters into their own hands, I don't mean like shooting their way out of it, but making things happen one way or another. You know, I'm not talking about like violent revolution or overthrowing the government, but just changing society through non-governmental means.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. That's happened. And it is coming up through the younger generation who are not part of this kind of post-World War, Jewish interests on steroids manifesting in the culture just about everywhere, with four channels to listen to Jewish lies. They're too far removed from the boomer generation, and they've got the internet, and there's just too much information out there. This is a big problem for Israel as well. You can't commit a genocide in 2024 and expect the world not to know about it. you're seeing these videos coming out of there on social media, and you know they're there in a panic, and you are seeing the sea change when it comes to Israel as well. But these are all kind of separate topics. What was the other topic we were talking about just before you talked about the white lady in America?
Was I talking about Trump? The right-wing populist parties and movements all over, certainly all over Europe, but, you know, Trump in America. I don't know if you've really got one in Canada, but although in Canada, the province of Alberta may wind up having a referendum on declaring independence from Canada, because Canada's... It's too gay. People are sick of all the gayness.
Yeah.
But because you see... Yeah. Go for it.
Because everything they do, you know, everything that the Jewish interests push, it's always against the natural order of things. They're always pushing against the tides, you know, which is why they have to work so hard with propaganda and lobbying and lies all the time. And eventually, you know, it's like the tide is too powerful. And it doesn't matter how many barriers they erect against this tide, it's overwhelming. I mean, you know, not to be using constant analogies, but, you know, the genie's out of the bottle now when it comes to Israel. You know, it really is. You know, the dam is not, there isn't just trickles anymore. There is significant, you know, leaks coming out of that. I don't know if you've ever seen a dam bursting, but it does get to the point where it's just, it's inevitable that the whole thing's just going to collapse and the flood's going to come. And, you know, when you have people like Tucker Carlson and you have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene with a very thinly veiled acknowledgement that, you know, that the U.S. is being brought into, being attempted to be pulled into a war with Iran, which presents no threat to America, but for the interests of another country thousands of miles away, which itself has nuclear weapons, you know, without actually mentioning the name Israel. Everybody knows who she's talking about. You know, that's sort of, you know, I'm pointing out that these are significant cracks in the dam. They're not just little seeping things that you can fix at this point. It's already past that point. You know, the horse is bolted on Israel. Now, that's going to present some very interesting problems, perhaps, for these populist leaders who are, when they have some victory in the culture war, they always stand by Israel. That's changing, because the attitude towards Israel is changing. And America are increasingly recognizing that this is a grift. This is a parasitic relationship between Israel and America. And people are saying, sorry, you now have people seriously questioning this previously unchallenged assumption and assertion that we must stand by Israel. Now you have an increasing amount of Americans who are saying, you know, even on the right, which is typically, you know, pro-Israel, why do we, we're America first. What's this Israel first business all about?
Yeah.
We voted, you know, people need to, you know, start to show, and this is why Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tucker Carlson are important, people like that, because, you know, this is the MAGA crowd. They represent the voice of the people who voted for Donald Trump and went to these rallies in adoration when he says, okay, we need to stop these wars. Well, you know, and they need to hold his feet to the fire with us, and that will bring pressure on him from his base. Because we didn't go to these rallies. Maybe we need to show you these rallies, Donald, where you were getting all this adoration, telling us that we shouldn't be bombing the Houthis or we shouldn't be starting wars everywhere. We need to get out of all these foreign wars, and it's ridiculous. So there's a lot of pressure there for him. And then, of course, as I say, he's got the usual, in quotes, neocons, and those who are bought and paid for by the Zionists to pursue this war with Iran. So they're very interesting times, and but with, as ever, you don't really know what Trump's going to say from one day to the next. It's very, very difficult to read the man, and I don't think they're, like I said, there's any 5D chess going on. I just don't think they have a coherent strategy. It's just like, well, whatever, you know, I'll say one thing on a Tuesday and another thing on a Tuesday evening. Trump is capable of that. It's barely any hyperbole. I mean, if you have two interviews with Trump on the same day, he's likely to say two different things on any given position, particularly with foreign policy. You know, so they are interesting times, and
and the times are ripe for somebody, whether it's somebody who's already part of one of these populist, right-wing populist movements, or even left-wing populist movement, or somebody new to come along and point out the obvious. And, you know, say, look, we all wanted an end to immigration. We want an end to, you know, gayness and trannyism. We want an end to these wars. And, somebody on McCurris' show was, or maybe somebody on the judge's show was saying, whoever we elect, it turns into John McCain. It's right for somebody to come along and... Maybe it's somebody new, or maybe it's somebody who's already established who then just says, like, enough is enough.
What about me, Patrick?
Could be. You never know.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, we haven't even touched on them. Yeah. There's so much. And you've got this whole situation with, I don't know why, it was quite a cool sight to behold, but China flew over Egypt. They are with an air. A show of air power. They are apparently strengthening ties with Egypt. And then you've got this whole Gaza ethnic cleansing, actual ethnic cleansing thing going on. You know, that apparently they're just going to go in there and move. You know, the final solution is they're going just to go in and move the Palestinians from Gaza.
And is it the defense minister? Some high official in Israel is saying, well, wait a minute, like at least 30% of our reservists aren't going to show up. They're not showing up for duty. Others warning about a civil war, and this is really possible. The settlers in the West Bank are very violent, and they're they really are very violent, and they're well armed. Maybe they're not well disciplined, but they could start trying to take matters into their hand, and who knows what's going to happen there? Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of people.
Yeah, and it could be an attempt by the Israelis to actually start a wider war to try and drag the U.S. into it yet again. Because there's all sorts of things. You know, as I say, you have this unprecedented, it has to be said, display of air power from the Chinese.
Good for them. Not only do I stand with the Chinks, I fly with the Chinks.
Yeah, it looked pretty cool. It was like it was in the shape of a like an arrow. You had this massive big plane at the front, and then you had four fighter jets on each side of it. It's possibly it might have even flown over Israel. I don't know, but it was a message. And then you have tensions where you had Turkish fighter jets. I think probably six or eight of them shadowing an Israeli fighter jet, which was, as usual, dropping massive bombs on Syria. Syria is a great threat, so they have to be constantly bombing everyone. That's all they do, from the safety of the clouds, just bomb. And it's the same in Yemen and Palestine, they're bombing civilians. In the case of Syria, apparently they're bombing, you know, air defense.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full 1 year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Safety of the clouds just bomb, and it's the same in Yemen and Palestine. They're bombing civilians. In the case of Syria, apparently they're bombing, you know, air defense batteries and whatever, anything that's a quote threat to the Israelis. But the Turks shadowed it and warned them, and apparently they attempted at least to jam the Israeli fighter jets, radar, and other sort of electronic warfare stuff. But there was warnings, because the Turks have finally had enough of the Israeli bombing Syria. So there's tensions all over the place. And if the Israelis are stupid enough to go in and try this final solution, the ethnic cleansing business in Palestine, you know, that is not going to end well for them. But like I said, I mean, it's just a powder keg for all, you know, because that could be, that might be the final straw, the red line for even some of these other Arab countries. And as I say, you've got Egypt now with, it seems, an official display of power and solidarity with Egypt. You know, maybe Egypt will step in if Israel continues.
Hey.
And
Egypt is a BRICS country.
Well, there you go. So you've got Egypt, you've got Turkey now shadowing and, you know, making threats to the Israelis. You know, the Israelis are becoming increasingly isolated. And then you've got Trump, was looking for the clip coming out with this statement last night that, you know, that the Houthis, he said, you know, we've made a deal with them and they're not going to bomb our ships anymore. And they said they don't want to fight anymore and stop bombing us. And they capitulated, basically. I find that hard to believe. If anything, I think it's more likely to escalate, and the Houthis are more likely to continue hitting ships in Israel even harder, because, you know, the Israelis, in response to that missile hitting Ben Gurion Airport, within the perimeter of the airport at least, it didn't hit a terminal or a runway or whatever, but, you know, these airports have got big perimeters. It did land within the perimeter. And then the Israelis went on a massive bombing campaign, completely over the top, killing loads of civilians and hitting Sana'a International Airport in Yemen. But, you know, you've got this whole Houthi thing. I mean, anything I know about the Houthis is this idea that they're going to capitulate. And I don't know how Trump, if he's lying and they just manufactured it for, you know, sort of like a victory, I'm a tough guy, the Houthis have capitulated. I don't know how he's going to hide it if they continue hitting ships. And by the way, yeah.
Well, no. I mean, we only have a second, like a few seconds left, so finish your by the way, and then we'll wrap it up.
Well, by the way, J.D. Vance correctly said about a month or 6 weeks ago, it's only about 3% of those ships coming through that region anyway that have any kind of connection to U.S. interests. The rest of they're hitting ships which are designed to affect Israel in terms of, you know, commerce and other pressures within Israel. I imagine there's, you know, to invoke even internal pressure on Israel, because I imagine, you know, citizens and businesses are probably reliant on some of that stuff coming through there. But I don't know what to make of that, because, you know, I don't know. We haven't got time, but it seems unlikely to me that the Houthis are going to just back down and that Trump's telling the truth to that, you know.
Yep. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for joining.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even mention the fact that India and Pakistan are officially going at it. But we'll leave that for another time.
Well, maybe later this week.
Sure thing.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me.
All right, Patrick, thanks for having me.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Legal Radio.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.